All Quiet on the Western Front is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps Theater. My name is Grace. This is our daily Best Picture nominee special series pod, where each day we highlight a film that has been nominated for an Academy Award in the Best Picture category. Of course, my name is Grace, co-host Ariel, unavailable to join us today, but that's all right. We have a wonderful guest from the podcast, There Will Be Pod, a movie podcast from 32 fans. It's John. John, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Grace? Thanks so much for having me on.
I am good. I'm excited to chat about this international feature that's been nominated for Best Picture. A little bit of a surprise in terms of a nominee, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of, I think you could point to a lot of, you know, reasons why maybe we shouldn't be as surprised, but it did seem like it flew under the radar for a really long time and then kind of picked up some steam as the nominations got close and even some more since the nominations have been announced.
Yes. So we'll dive into it. Just a reminder, make sure you subscribe, postshowrecaps.com/movies to subscribe to our feed so you won't miss any of our daily Oscar, the daily Oscar series, and any of our usual coverage.
I just say something real quick?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say I'm like really excited to be on a podcast that opens with blank is over, but we're just getting started.
Oh, because yes, yes, of course.
I've been listening to that intro for a really long time. So really cool.
Very fun. It is cool. Yeah. All right. So All Quiet on the Western Front. Yeah, I mean, you said it surprised, maybe we shouldn't have been as surprised. It's a movie that premiered at TIFF in September and then dropped in on Netflix in October, I believe. And yeah, I felt like was sort of critically pretty well received when it dropped, but I don't know that it had sort of this Oscar, you know, nomination. And it does just feel like it had a really good promotional time where, and it started to sort of sound like it was getting buzz as something that could get nominated. I was hearing that sort of in the weeks leading up to as sort of the nominations were open. And then I feel like by the time the nominations came out, it wasn't a super surprise that it got nominated. If you were sort of like following it, but I think was for other people who this might have been a film that sort of like was not on their radar. Mm-hmm. I love this film. I think it's like very, very good. I rewatched it in preparation for the podcast, and it's quite harrowing. Like a lot, so much of this movie is just like in the trenches fighting. He's so dirty and obviously based on the book, and then there was a movie and then I think a German movie originally and then an American movie, and now this remake. So what are your thoughts on this movie, John?
So I'm a little bit more conflicted on the movie. I definitely think it's interesting. I want to talk a little bit about some of the reasons why maybe we shouldn't have been surprised that it got nominated, and I do think that like you're trying to place it within like what's happening right now in the zeitgeist, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I like to do that for all these movies, and some of them are more obvious than others. I think it's interesting that this movie comes out the same year that, you know, the first land war in Europe breaks out, within, yes. you know, 70 years or something like that. Like that to me is really interesting.
Yeah, I heard David Cronenberg was talking about with Infinity Pool when Infinity Pool came out. And he's like, it's a total coincidence that there's this many like capitalism movies all happening at once. Like not from like what's happening in society, but the fact that they all sort of like in 2022, early 2023, all sort of, you know, in terms of movies, we obviously have Triangle of Sadness, which is also nominated. And we had Infinity Pool and there was the White Lotus and their Succession. Like it does make sense like in our culture that happened. The idea that like everybody's trying to make these movies all is a bit of a coincidence. And I think the same thing here, that like, you know, obviously this movie would have been well into production by the time Russia invades Ukraine, but yeah, very timely that it does have like the brutality of war, a war that happens basically 100 years ago, with the start of a war in Europe. That is very fascinating, John.
Yeah, the response is, we'll say, fortuitous for Netflix. You know, like in the sense that like that was something that people could latch on to this film, I think, in a way. And I think that the Netflix of it all was definitely a factor too, where for the past 5 or 6 years or so, they've had like a really clear kind of big movie to push for Oscars, from Roma to Power of the Dog last year. And I felt like this year coming in, it seemed like a little odd. Like there was Blonde,
Blonde. Yeah, Blonde definitely happened.
It was a movie that like you could have watched on Netflix, hopefully didn't. But I felt like coming into the year, that was like maybe a Netflix movie that was gonna be like awards buzzy. Glass Onion was another one that, like, you know, you could have imagined maybe them wanting to, like, kind of push a little bit.
I think Glass Onion probably is, like, in that, like, you know, if we were nominating 15 films, yeah. Glass Onion is probably there. And not that I want them to nominate 15 films, but
no, we already have 10.
I think it's probably right. I think it's probably right on the bubble. I think it was in, it was like up there in the power rankings.
It probably was. I would think so. And that another one that fits into the capitalism theme that we talked about. But I think that ultimately this one just made a lot of sense and kind of came along at the right time. Is maybe having more of a moment than it would have if it came out last year, or it would if it comes out in 2023, potentially, depending on what we see. So it worked out for this movie. I don't think that it's totally worthy. I guess we can talk a little bit some of the reasons why I have a hang up about it. I haven't read the book. I wanted to just preface that. I haven't read the novel, All Quiet on the Western Front. I did see the original movie that came out, I think, in 1930, which won Best Picture. I think it was like the third or the fourth movie that ever won Best Picture. So, like, very early in Oscar history. It has a long legacy. I saw that in college. I don't really remember all that much about it. I don't remember being, like, especially fond of it. Haven't thought about it too much. This movie, obviously, you know, has a lot more going on from a technical perspective because of the advancements of technology over 100 years almost. It also took a lot of, I think, I don't want to say liberties, but, like, there's stuff in this movie that wasn't in the original movie and wasn't in the book, specifically referring to, like, the plot following the kind of higher up German kind of politician-y type characters trying to bring the war to an end.
The Daniel Brühl storyline.
Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah.
From Marvel. Yeah.
I love Daniel Brühl. Yeah. I didn't find this stuff to be especially helpful from both, like, a dramatic perspective and a thematic perspective. And I felt like that held the film back. Whereas the, you know, you're there in the trenches with kind of these young men who are totally not prepared for what, you know, is facing them, is really, as you said, harrowing and you know, compelling and really beautifully depicted from a, you know, cinematography, the sound design, etc. perspective. So it it's kind of like a film of two halves, and I feel like you know, it kind of maybe balances out in the end for me. Whereas, like, I recommend people watch this movie, but I don't feel like it has the impact that maybe it could have if it focused more on just those characters.
My interpretation is less so about A Tale of Two Halves and feeling like the movie is really bookmarked strongly, and that the middle probably sort of sags a little bit in terms of my my rewatching of the movie. I definitely feel like the opening sort of sequence of these kids and how excited they are to go to war, and, you know, I have to remember this is, like, you know, the first World War. As I'll shout out my co-host Ariel, who I'll remind that this was the Great War at the time, not right. World War One. Why would they name it that?
And yeah, branding change later.
Yeah, there is this, like, wonderful sort of, like, in terms of how it's depicted, of the sort of youthfulness and vigor and, like, that the propaganda, influence to go to war, to happily sign up for war, which we'll talk a lot more about, because both of our moments sort of highlight that. With this, like, looming score, this is a movie in terms of that did get nominated for Best Original Score. That
it's, I think, great. That I loved the score.
Yeah, whatever the instrument that they're using that just has this, like chiming, like, dreading, you know, sound that's just, like, looming over them is so good. Specifically, we'll get into that in our memorable moments section. But so all of that, and then with the actual, like, basically, like, all of the stuff that happens when they're first in war and as they're realizing, like, oh my God, this is awful, this is terrible, as Paul sort of first encounters the death of his friends, his one colleague who he finds in the morning, he steps on his glasses and turns him over, and his leg has been blown off and he's dead. Like, all of this, like, I thought was, like, visually, like, stunning, especially for a thing that, like, you know, there's been a lot of war movies that have been made, you know, I think it's, like, you know, the absolute sort of, like, you know, horrific nature of war, I thought really worked. And then I thought that the end really worked, this idea, it's just, well, especially when, like, Paul and what's his buddy's name, he hangs out Yeah, I gotta pull this.
He's like a slightly older, kind of. Is it Cat?
Yeah, I guess it would be Cat. Cat. Their antics are like at the farm, is really fun. I think fun, and also horrific.
Yeah,
like them sort of being like stranded, sure. While like everybody is assuming the war is ending and celebrating. Only for essentially after Cat dies, Paul to be told, actually, the armistice is at 11. We're going to go kill as many Frenchmen as we can before at 10:45. And this scene and like the knowing that the war is going to end mm-hmm. and yet Paul has to go back in. And this is where he gets stabbed by the Frenchman because he's just like killing as many people is like, I think really strong. So I think she think like the beginning and the end of the movie for me are where there's like the strongest set piece along. And I think that if you look at the nominations, I said this about Tar, that I think like if you look at sort of the things that Tar has been nominated for, I think gives it not the best chance to win, but I can sort of like map out a path to victory in terms of like it's like best director, best screenplay, best lead actress. There's like sort of this like totality to the things that make a really good movie. I think All Quiet on the Western Front, in my opinion, is a very good movie. Mm-hmm. But like the things, it's nominated for a bunch of things, but it's nominated for adapted screenplay, score, sound, production design, cinematography, makeup and hairstyling, best visual effects. None of the like director or acting performances, which I do think makes sense because it's an international film, but sort of are the reasons why like I think that it won't like it won't quite for me map onto winning best picture, but we'll get into that. But yeah, I think it bookends really well. I think what really for me like uplifts this film.
Yeah, and I think that the stuff that I talked about not necessarily connecting with as much the Brule of it all, good actor, but that's the sort of segment of the story is necessary to kind of put the stakes into the climax, which you talked about, and I think it is very like dramatic and emotionally, because you have this connection, this character that you followed now for more than 2 hours and seen what he's gone through. To put like almost a ticking clock on like, him actually surviving this whole ordeal is really dramatically, I think, interesting and compelling. I think what I ended up sort of feeling a little bit, I guess you could say, turned off by from all that is that, obviously one of the big influences on this movie is Paths of Glory, the Stanley Kubrick movie, which I think, is one of the best war movies ever made. And what that movie did, I thought so well is, also depicting World War One is showing that like, War is Hell is this big subgenre of movies, right? Yes. Where, you're kind of following soldiers and seeing them struggle. Some movies are better than others, but I think that like Paths of Glory does such a great job at showing like war is hell because we choose to go into it and sacrifice people. And it is like this like sort of folly of human error or cruelty or whatever you want to call it that like puts people in these positions. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this movie by kind of injecting this stuff and showing that like, hey, there's actually good people on the other side, like trying to make this right, trying to do the right thing. And like, they're just sort of, getting tripped up and having these sort of issues with that because, war as a, if you want to call it like an organism is like, so evil. I felt like it takes some of the like human choices out of the decision. And I felt like for a while I'm watching this movie and I'm like, does this like fit into the like kind of eat the rich genre that we've been talking about this year so much, where it's just like, look at what these people are making these poor young boys do by tricking them and putting them in this position and doing all these things to them. And I felt like it like maybe steps on that a little bit by kind of showing the powerful people who are trying to fix it. And not that those people I'm sure didn't exist, but I felt like, for me, a more compelling message would have been like, why do we constantly do this to ourselves instead of war as an abstract concept kind of, bringing its worst impulses onto us?
Yeah, I guess for me, I don't super have a problem with the sort of the like higher up scenes, but they are definitely the least forgettable for me, only saved by the fact that it is Daniel Brühl and my friend from we're rewatching Dark And the man who plays Egon Tiedemann, the middle-aged Egon Tiedemann, plays one of the German officials as well. So I was like, oh, that's very fun to see him in here. But other than that, yeah, I feel like this stuff probably is the most forgettable. And to your point, maybe even like, you know, drags it down from being perhaps
like an all-time like great war movie, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the scarf is a souvenir that keeps getting passed around as like the thing that goes from person to person. I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't know if that's from the book. I also haven't read the book.
So this is also I don't remember if that was in the older movie again, you know, not knowing much about the book, but another one of the influences that I picked up, you could point to like a number of movies that kind of do something like this, but have you ever seen the Earrings of Madame De?
No, I have not. No.
It's a great movie from, I want to say like the 40s. Of the 50s,
53
that sounds right. Yeah, French director Max Ophuls. It's following these earrings from across, you know, time and space, and it's just a wonderful movie and kind of doing something similar here. You can also point to like a War Horse, which is a World War One movie which does this in the form of a horse. Probably less successfully, but
you know, that's very funny. I was gonna say that There's two movies that actually like that I've now just like reminded me, which I was actually going to say earlier when you're talking about how timely Netflix like kind of, you know, unfortunately at the expense of a war happening, got lucky. But one of the movies that's nominated for Best Documentary is A House Made of Splinters. I don't know if you check this out, but it's actually. So I was kind of intrigued to watch it because I heard it was about a Ukrainian orphanage that during war there'd be these orphanages that were set up because people obviously were separated from their parents, and so I was very intrigued to watch it. And then when I started, it was like, oh yeah, of course this isn't from last year. This is from 2014 with the invasion of Crimea. But then it's come out this year, and then there at the end there's a title card that talks about how this is basically happening again. I just heard of a story in the news today. The Daily, a great podcast, you know, listen to it, covered that Russia is taking Ukrainian orphans, essentially, or even if they're not orphans, they're taking them, giving them Russian citizens in, putting them in foster homes in Russia, and declaring that they are children of the Russian state, which is essentially a war crime. But I'm like, oh my God, it's like House of Made of Splinters. Like, I don't know if it's my favorite documentary, but I'm like, it's very timely now. You know, I feel bad that like, yeah, they made this documentary in 2014, finally has been made. And then it's like, unfortunately timely. And then as you're talking about War Horse, I'm thinking of a movie that is not like this at all. It's EO, which is international feature, up against All Quiet on the Western Front, but it's about a donkey that keeps traveling in the hands of different Europeans. Very good film.
I think we completed a pretty compelling movie ladder to borrow the title of another friend's podcast.
Yesterday's podcast was the folks from the movie ladder talking about Elvis.
Römer Paul, Wiesengrund 53, geboren 18.11.99, korrekt?
Jawohl, Offizier.
Paul. Hier, kann mein Vater stolz auf dich sein?
Ja.
Alles in Ordnung?
Ja, möchte noch nicht loslegen.
Abflug.
Entschuldigung,
die gehört schon wem?
Ja, aber ihr wohl zu klein für den Kerl, ne? Da kommt ihr mal wieder vor. Hier, Mart J.
Danke.
All right, well, let's talk about our memorable moments from the film then. Why don't you go first? You're talking about the scene where the clothes are sort of repurposed.
This is super early in the movie. And you sort of open with this like harrowing depiction of, you know, the front, right? One take or close to it. Title card comes up, you know, very dramatic events, and then kind of like the aftermath, right? And you see a big pile of boots being, you know, assembled, and at one point a jacket is taken off of the character who we followed over this short portion of the movie, and then you just sort of see the jacket go through. It's like the Ophuls movie I mentioned. It's moving from the front to, you know, the production, whatever you want to call it, place where a woman who sews off the identifying details, and they wash it, no dialogue through any of this. It's all just kind of like mundane actions, but they end up having like this really profound meaning later, you know, as the sequence goes on, where we see the main characters, you know, after a short period, they're kind of recruited, and then they go into the office to get weighed and all this other stuff. And the main character, Paul, is pretty much where we meet him, and he's given this uniform by, you know, a higher up officer or whatever. And, you know, he notices that there's still like a tag with somebody's name on it. And of course, you know, like, oh, this belonged to somebody. It's like, no, it didn't. It was too big for him. So, you know, here, I'll just take it off, and drops it on the floor. And here you go. Here's your uniform back. And I felt like watching that the first time, and I also rewatched the movie before we had a chance to talk about it, really stood out and kind of set the stage for what I wanted the movie to be, which was, again, like this, like, look at what these people are doing versus what these people are doing. And there's the people who know that, like, how this is going to go for you, and they know all the details, and there's the people who just don't, and they're not privileged to have that information, I guess. And I thought that that was just like a really simple way of conveying that message. Even though I don't think the film like follows through and pulls it off entirely, I still feel like having a sequence like that in the movie is, you know, works in that kind of thematic way, and tells a good story, and is really kind of like just a heartbreaking moment to introduce, you know, a lead character in.
Yeah, I think the scene is really powerful. I think especially sort of like that it doesn't really explain what's happening as they're like chucking the boots. Like, you know, I wouldn't have even thought of that as a thing that was happening in the war, that they would want to reuse all the stuff.
Everything is useful, right? It has to be.
It's so wild. It's so powerful. It's sort of you realize that they're like, cleaning everything to be reused.
And just this idea that like boots and jackets are more valuable than humans.
Human lives. Yeah. And then it culminates sort of this theme with Paul walking to the front of the line, so excited to get him and his buddy. He looks over and his buddy is holding like his pile of stuff, and he's like, so good. He's like, see you, Paul. Like, I'll see you out there. Like,
I got it.
They're like, you know, and then Paul notices the tag. It already belongs to someone. He says, oh no, it didn't fit. It is really powerful. It's really good. And like, you know, I haven't watched the original movie. I haven't read the book, so I don't know how much of this is in here, but it's like, it's really, really good. There's a reason this movie was shot for, or sort of nominated for best cinematography, because like, the scenes of them just like chucking boots, and these women like cleaning like the blood out of these like garments to like just reuse them and send more kids off to war is like absolutely chilling.
There were so many like just really beautiful compositions in this movie. I thought of like blood mixed with mud in like ways that were grotesque, but also kind of like weirdly picturesque and beautiful.
Yeah.
And I found that, you know, for all the technical awards that the movie is nominated for and some that it isn't, but I felt like the cinematography like stood out to me as like especially memorable and noteworthy. And from, like I said, the compositions right down to, you know, the way that very first scene is shot like on such an extended take.
I'm going to pick. I'm picking the a scene. There's many that I could have picked. This is a tough one. We're editing the sort of audio. You have heard it into the podcast. Tough for a German film, and a film where a lot of, again, I think like the power of this film is like how like the spectacle of it, the epic nature of it, which like you know, if I could figure out how to edit in like the whole, like literally like almost his entire like first battle sequence, like I would, pretty much impossible to do. So I will instead go with kind of a similar moment, at least plays on similar themes to the moment that you had selected, which is this moment when they get they're listening into this like epic speech about their role and that Germany is going to win the war. And then all the way up to this moment where they are marching into battle for the first time, and they are chanting and sort of like singing, but at the same time it's playing the score from the film, which is sort of this like haunting sort of like, I don't even know how to describe it. But it's like just these chilling chimes that are playing over top of these like these young men going into war as they're chanting and just have like bought into the propaganda. This will be fine. Germany will win. War is not that bad. It's a worthwhile cause to go and join the German army. And just knowing that like we've already actually seen the we've actually seen already like in earlier in the film, like,
see what happens.
We've seen what happens to these men. And it's just, again, chilling, horrific. Someone asked me on Twitter recently, they asked me, what's the definition of a horror movie? And so I said, I feel like it's like a horror movie is designed to essentially like elicit fear, or like, you know, to be scared, or like awe, you know, like disgust, I think too, you could fit into that. And then they replied and they said, is All Quiet on the Western Front a horror movie? And I said, I think it is trying to elicit like fear and horror and disgust in us. So I think definitely there's lots of part, like, why isn't it a horror film? I think like,
it totally is. And I have a very liberal definition of what a horror movie is too. When the movie Eighth Grade came out a few years ago, I said, I wrote that it was the best horror movie to come out in a decade. And I think that totally is true.
Yeah, the horrors of like, yeah, just being a young child. Yeah.
Yeah. Adolescent awkwardness and whatnot. Yeah. But I think this definitely qualifies. I think the score helps in that matter for sure. There's like a little Zimmer-esque quality to it, but it's also not like such a ripoff of Hans Zimmer, which I think a lot of other, you know, plenty of movies have done over the last 10 years. So I appreciated that.
I just loved it. I mean, this film like is what it is. Like, you know, I think you go into All Quiet on the Western Front, I think assuming you know that like the idea is like, yeah, the war was bad. The war was not good. You know, it's not it's not really this like heroic tale. Like, you know, it is. There's like, you know, I was looking up some of the stuff, and there's like there is some great lines, I think, in here. There's like my son was killed in the war. Like, he doesn't feel any honor. This idea of like that, like you can like, you know, use propaganda against, or what is a soldier without war, is another line from the movie, right? These like the idea of like using these young kids. I think the idea of the soundtrack being overlaid, the score, this like, you know, that I, you know, being overlaid with like the kids chanting about how excited they are, like that they're gonna go kill the Allied power, is like it's awful. It's like, yeah, it's terrible. It's
something about us knowing more than the characters do that just like has this existential dread over everything.
Yeah, 100%. All right, well, let's shift to the segment. If it won, John, I think I know the answer to this question, but the idea being, if at the end of the 95th Academy Awards, All Quiet on the Western Front took home Best Picture, how would you feel? Interestingly, this movie did win Best Picture at the BAFTAs recently. It got nominated for a ton of stuff, pretty much everything it got nominated for, it could at the BAFTAs, and ended up taking home, which I thought was a little bit surprising, especially with like Banshees up against it.
Yeah, right.
I thought maybe something a little bit more like British Irish could take them, but it went to All Quiet over Banshees, Everything Ever All at Once, Tar, and Elvis, which three of those four I could see winning. I don't think Elvis is going to win, but how would you feel if All Quiet on the Western Front won Best Picture?
I'd say like mildly let down, but I try not to like take it too personally anymore. I think I used to, but I kind of got that out of my system at some point. Maybe it was Green Book that I kind of like, okay, I need to stop taking this up personally.
Green Book has been mentioned so many times on our daily Oscar of like the thing that like nobody wants to happen ever again. It's like,
yeah, well, sure. I mean, totally valid, but
don't Green Book it.
No, please don't. Yeah, no, I'm not going to feel that way if this movie wins. But I think that like almost more than anything else, like Netflix has been trying to get an Oscar so hard for so long. And
that was so funny last year. They had Power of the Dog, certainly the front runner going into last year's Oscar. And then somehow Coda like sort of pulls it out. And it's not only that it was Coda, but Coda also was bought by Apple TV. And so Apple
exactly.
TV,
it's like
streaming wars. It's very funny.
You can't say that there's a streaming bias anymore because they gave one to freaking Apple for crying out loud. But I do think that like, you know, if this is the movie that Netflix finally wins for, it's like, maybe it's perfect, you know, maybe it's perfect that after The Power of the Dog and Roma and so, you know, other like really, really great, amazing movies that they've had, that they've campaigned so hard for, that didn't get there, that it ends up being All Quiet on the Western Front, which is just like kind of down the middle, you know, fastball for the Academy. You know, I think that that'll be fine. I think it's cool. It would be cool to see another foreign language film win Best Picture after Parasite. Like, that was awesome. And I'd be excited in that respect for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing here, I don't know if it's happened. Maybe I'll try to do some research very quickly, but this movie is nominated for Best International Feature and then also nominated for Best Picture. None of the other international features are nominated this year. So it does seem like this is probably a lock to win Best International Picture. One of my favorite movies of the year. Actually, I have a couple. I really loved A Close. Not a perfect film, but a film, a coming of age kind of LGBTQ film, certainly speaks highly to me, but I have to imagine All Quiet on the Western Front does take home an award, at least in the category of international picture. But I always think it's very funny. Like, if it doesn't, so say like Argentina 1985 beats it, and but then doesn't Argentina 1985 didn't get nominated for Best Picture. What does that mean? What is Argentina 1985 actually better than like whatever actually wins? Not really.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know what to make of that. That would be extra confusing. I suspect somebody could probably better explain like the difference between bodies that nominate versus bodies that vote for winners. Maybe there's some like differences there that would help explain it, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I know in international feature, there was like one of sort of like the bigger, what people were calling a snub was like that RRR did not get nominated. But right. That's because I think this is a bad rule that each country can only submit one film. And I don't know who gets to decide, like, okay, I'm nominated for Belgium, you know, or like whatever.
Yeah. It's a bad, there's a board, like, I think in all these countries that do this, or yeah, I can't say speak for every country, but I know that there have been like some, let's call them mild controversies over the years of like, oh, the French board chose this movie over that movie. Why did they do that? And I guess that's what happened here, but it does seem like an odd decision to say like, okay, everybody choose one and we're choosing from, you know, that like list of 150.
Yeah, because, yeah, so RRR does not get nominated because India picked a different film, thinking that they potentially had a shot at getting nominated for Best Picture and sort of were, like, playing for, like, we could win twice, or whatever. Whatever the, like, play was seems to have been miscalculated, but whatever. Just a very weird situation. But, yeah, I think ultimately I would feel pretty disappointed, I think, if All Quiet on the Western Front wins. And I think where that comes from for me is that, well, I certainly can appreciate what the film was. I think something like Everywhere All at Once, even in my head, like Banshees feels like a bit to me that like there are films that are doing things that we haven't actually done in film before. Yeah. I feel like Everything Everywhere All at Once is so revolutionary as a film and an idea and like what it could mean to win. I do feel like winning Best Ensemble Cast, I believe at the SAG Awards and the speech that was given about like, 30 years ago, this would never get made because like it would be made with white people, essentially. I feel like really opens the door for Everything Ever All at Once to win. And so it's not that I can't, you know, I appreciate All Quiet being a great film, but there are films that are doing that feel just more 2023, even though there is a war in Europe. These are films. Tar to me feels very like timely of the moment. Like it's commenting on like cancel culture and our relationship with like kind of awful people and their ability to create amazing art. And it's an interesting conversation that like, yeah, this is a great movie, but like there have been great war movies before. So happy for it to be nominated. Don't think I'd be super, you know, excited to end the night on All Quiet winning. And I thought maybe it had a little bit of momentum after BAFTA, but I don't really think that will pan out. I think there's sort of Everything Ever at Once in the pole position with a few other films that I think would be a surprise, but not as surprising as others.
Yeah, it has to jump probably three or four titles at least.
Yes, I think so. All right, well, very fun. This is actually our first time talking about Everything Everywhere. Oh, sorry, not Everything Everywhere. Sorry, All Quiet on the Western Front on Post-Show Recaps Theater, the only one of the Best Picture nominees that we did not have a previous standalone episode. So, John, thanks so much for coming on and chatting about it.
This was awesome. Thanks so much, Grace. Appreciate it.
John, where can people find you and what are you up to?
Sure. So I am the co-host, as you mentioned, of There Will Be Pod with Sammy Chester on 32 Fans, I guess. I don't know. It's on like, places where you download podcasts. I also co-host another movie podcast called It's the Pictures with a film critic from Boston named Max Coville. We talk, I would say, mostly about older movies, but not exclusively. And I don't have any social media. I am in the 32 Fans chat quite a bit. am a member of the Online Film Critics Society. I write about movies, cool. Not as much as I used to. You can check out my archives if you're so inclined at johnlikesmovies.com.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. I'm Graves. Ariel's not here. And this is Pressure.